Welcome into the final hour of Darren, Donick, and Chase. We are awaiting the arrival of Derek Mason. We expect to talk to him for our weekly visit here in just a moment. And then Mitch Light will join us. Mitch after Mason. Mitch is with, of course, The Athletic, now college football editor, and on top of things. So we'll hit into a lot of the issues going on with college football as they soldier through all of the cancellations, etc. And, of course, Vanderbilt hosting Florida, a team in the SEC championship picture, perhaps in the college football playoff picture. Vanderbilt trying to get better. They've closed the gap. They've been much more competitive the last couple of weeks, but they have fallen short. So, Chase, looking forward to talking to Coach Mason.
Yeah, it'll be good to chat with him. I thought, you know, that was my underdog pick this week, and it came very close. I thought they were competitive, just wasn't quite enough for them. And, you know, you just have to hope that it gets a little bit better every week as they try and, you know, wrap up the season. But I know we're kind of in a bit of a stall as we wait for Coach Mason to call in, trying to track him down.
So Florida, of course, is going to be a big topic this week. They played so well. Of course, they've still got Tennessee to play before the season's over. So both teams with the interest here in the league will get a chance firsthand to see Florida. We'll see if they can continue to do well. One of our questions for pick six centered around Kyle Trask, and he did not disappoint. Actually got to the threshold. We were asking. He averages about 350, 360 passing yards per week. The over-under was 350. He got it pretty early when he came down to it, and they took him out right after he crossed 350, and he was almost to 300 by halftime. So it just kind of gives you the explosiveness. And I saw earlier this week, Chase, our buddy Jimmy Shapiro, who loves to put out the odds, he actually has Kyle Trask as the odds-on favorite to win the Heisman right now, which is a little surprising.
Wow, that is surprising.
But, of course, when you consider Trevor Lawrence has not played the last couple of weeks, and you know, you still got Justin Fields, and their game got canceled, so he didn't play. He can't showcase himself. I guess I see it where he's closed the gap. But I still view Trevor Lawrence as the best player, but that is going to be a heck of a vote because you've got some quarterbacks that have been extremely productive.
Yeah.
Mac Jones would have to be in the conversation too.
Yeah, I would think Mac Jones is definitely in the conversation. I mean, I've been impressed with Kyle Trask. I never thought he would be, you know, as good as he has been. I thought that he was solid. You know, Felipe Franks, just it never completely fit there at Florida. Now he's moved on to Arkansas, but I thought with Dan Mullen that he was going to be able to develop Trask into something, but not to the level that he has been. I mean, he's been special, and if he ends up winning the Heisman, I mean, how big of an upset would that be over, you know, Fields or Trevor Lawrence? As those are the two guys that I think everybody thought would be fighting it out for the Heisman Trophy this year. And granted, it's been a different year, but then it goes to a Florida quarterback. That would be something.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's not the first Florida quarterback that has won that. I'm trying to find the email here that has the latest on this. Kyle Trask, they have at this point the 3-2 favorite. Mac Jones second. This is, you know, Jimmy Shapiro and his crew. I'm sure others might differ. Mac Jones at 2-1 second. Justin Fields 3-1 third. Trevor Lawrence 13-4 is fourth. And then there's quite a bit of drop off after that. I think it's a four horse race. Ian Book 66-1, for example, a guy that's having a good year. I guess he can.
So what's the top four?
The top four are Trask, then Jones, then Fields, then Lawrence. And I would imagine that if Lawrence gets back and puts up big numbers, those odds could change.
And,
you know, we can envision a Clemson rematch with Notre Dame. I would imagine that would influence a lot of voters.
Yeah, and I think Fields, too, just because they haven't played a lot of games, he might be viewed as down right now. I think.
Yeah, same thing. I think Jones, Fields, and Lawrence haven't played, right? The Alabama's game was canceled.
Yeah,
Fields'
true.
Game was canceled. And Lawrence has been out with the COVID for 2 weeks. So welcome to 2020. And that has allowed Kyle Trask to sort of take the spotlight right now. I think I got the signal from Elijah that we have Coach Mason. Is that right?
That'd be correct.
All right. Well, let's bring Derek Mason on, the head coach of the Vanderbilt Commodores. And So, Coach, we were just talking about the challenge of facing Florida, and just give us your thought as you evaluate Kyle Trask, just the improvement he's made over time. He has risen to the top, and he's getting a top billing, and deservedly so right now.
Yeah, you know, as I've been able to watch, you know, Kyle Trask and evolve over the last, you know, couple of seasons, he's become a pronounced, leader of that Gator squad. You know, when you look at him, I mean, he understands where he's going with the football, and he's definitely got command of that offensive system, and he can make every throw. It's similar to watching Joey Burrow a year ago in terms of, you know, the ability to, you know, read coverage, check plays. I think he's a complete quarterback. I think he's got the ability to throw the deep ball as well as the ability to enough touch to be able to find any of the intermediates. He can make every throw. And so for me, you know, man, looking at, you know, Kyle Trask, I think he is the best, you know, college quarterback, outside of Trevor Lawrence right now in the college game.
That's high praise for sure. And regardless of who you were playing this week, I've been listening to what you've said. We have our daily reports here on our flagship with Joe Fisher. And I know getting off to a better start is an obvious thing for you guys. You guys have settled in the last couple of weeks. Once you guys get on track, you're right there. You've given yourselves a chance to win. It's just been a matter of trying to climb out of a pretty big hole.
Correct. And that's not where anybody wants to be. I mean, you want to be able to start fast. And, again, you know, our football team is found itself, you know, down, in our last couple of ball games and, like, definitely working hard to fight our way back. And that's something, you know, as we went out to practice today, I mean, as those guys got into a competitive period, I mean, it got off to a fast start, you know. I mean, you know, offense made a play, defense made a play. That's really what I wanted to see. I wanted to see how explosive it was going to be. I asked coaches to manufacture some explosives and, you know, really wanted to see how guys would take the challenge. But, you know, man, they came out today on a Tuesday, looking to be like competitive and go at one another. And that's sort of what we've got to do, you know, man, heading into this Florida game. We've got to be in attack mode. You know, regardless, I mean, like, we're somewhat playing with house money when you probably look at the numbers and what people say. So let's let it loose. Let's let it fly. Let's play hard. Let's play fast. Let's understand, you know, what we're trying to do. We understand who they are, like, on offense. And so, you know, defensively, I mean, that means, man, you got to tackle and play top down. And, you know, a lot of people say, okay, well, it's easier said than done. That may be right, but it does start with action.
And really, that also begs a question that we've debated this week. And over time, and you certainly can relate to this, going back to your days as a defensive coordinator at a place that could shut down the explosive offenses. It's gotten to a point where it's almost like we define good defense in college football differently than we did 10, 20 years ago. It's not a matter of just stifling a team. It's really hard to do that these days. But the key stops, getting the turnovers, making the big play at the key time, you have to sort of evaluate defense differently these days, don't you?
You really do. I think as you look at, you know, where football's evolved to, I mean, you know, everybody thinks that it may be about, you know, holding teams to, you know, like 16 points or less. Okay, well, there's probably maybe five defenses, you know, across the country that can even come close to holding teams under 20 points a game. You know, and that's a fact. I think what it does come down to is, you know, how do you limit explosive plays? Okay, can you get a team two third down and then get them off the field on third down? Okay, and then it's always been about, like, what are you able to defend in the red zone? And so, like, teams that are generally high in turnovers or teams that are high, you know, like, in third down, you know, like, efficiency and or teams that find a way to limit what teams do in the red zone and make them kick field goals, those are generally the teams that are winning. And what we've seen, you know, like, this year in 2020 is just an explosion of offense. I mean, like, the scores in college football have almost been almost like video game-like. And so, I mean, it just tells us that there's a gap and there's some things about, like, what has to happen defensively, like, in order to slow some of this stuff down. But it does – it continues to go in cycles. And what we're going to see is defense is going to come back around, okay, as you look more at, like, how to defend and you have time. This was just a unique year. But I do believe offense does have the advantage because it's easier to go out and throw a football than it is to go out and have guys defend air.
It seems like we check with you this every week, and you guys have done, I think, an admirable job not using this as an excuse. You go with who you got. But I know you guys have been fighting to keep the numbers to a reasonable point where you can play and feel like you got a chance. So is it better this week? Is it the same? I know there's been issues, but how are your numbers this week compared to the last couple of weeks?
You know what? Every week is a challenge. you know, to be honest, you're one test away. And so for us, we've been able to, you know, keep playing. I mean, that's what we want. That's what our kids want. And in order to play, man, you got to be on top of, okay, mask up. Where are you? Like, who are you eating with? You got to almost believe that everybody has it. And so you almost have to be, you know, extremely diligent about, you know, who you're around and really what you're doing. And like the protocols are the protocols, but I think, man, there's got to be some individual accountability, and our guys have done a great job, you know, man, week to week of working to make sure that we can get to game day. Again, you know, the testing is something that we don't control, but I think our players, as well as our medical staff, anywhere.
Oh, whoops. That sounded like a disconnection right
there. We lost Coach Mason.
He was on a roll.
He was. So
hopefully we'll get him back in a minute. But that has been tough. And I was looking at, for example, the U, right? Miami, having a good year. De'Aaron King is a good quarterback. They had a dramatic win against Virginia Tech. And after the game, they were saying they had, I think, they were three over the threshold of being able to play. They almost didn't have enough guys to play the game. They played and they won, barely. But that's the fight. You know, we've had it firsthand from a lot of different coaches. We've referenced Will Healy last week, or I guess it was a week and a half ago, maybe. Thursday, everything was a go. Friday, it wasn't. So
yeah, well, they've had their last two games
you
know, canceled. And
they've only had one stretch, I think, all year, Charlotte, of playing 3 weeks in a row. So it's everywhere, and it's a bigger challenge each week with the numbers going up.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting, too, to read you know, when some of these coaches that have coached in 2020, when they write their books and you get to the chapter on 2020, that's going to be a good read, because you know there are going to be some stories that come out about just how difficult it was to navigate through these waters of you're not only are you trying to prepare for a team like Florida, but do I have enough guys? Are there going to be enough players that are available? And it's not just Vanderbilt. Every coach, every team has had to go through something like that this year. But hate that he cut out there. I wanted to get his thoughts too on Mike Wright. We saw Mike Wright make a big difference in the red zone.
Yeah.
For Vanderbilt this week.
Yeah, I think Ken Seals is a key fourth and goal where they go for it, and it wasn't on the inch line, right? It was like the fourth and two. They decided to go for it and get it, and Wright deserves a lot of credit for that. So him working in with Ken Seals, who made some nice plays on his own.
Yeah, and Ken Seals kind of had the bounce back from a tough week the week before, and I know they didn't win, but I thought that, you know, you just see week to week he gets a little bit better and a little bit more confident, and he's learning, and I think if they continue to work with him and develop him, I think Ken Seals can be a pretty good quarterback for them. But being able to get in the red zone and work in somebody like Mike Wright that can get you some different type of plays, I think that's good too. And I kind of feel like, or I got the, you know, I got the idea that that's something they've been wanting to do. They just haven't found themselves in that position until this point.
I'm also, and you know how coaches are with injuries, we're not expected to get the full answer, but it was a shame. Keon Henry Brooks was having another outstanding game. He's only a sophomore, and with each passing week, he's a dual-purpose guy. He can run it. He can catch it. They're getting the ball more, and then he took a hard shot, and he was carted off the field. He looked like he was in a lot of pain. I don't know where that leaves them running back-wise, but you know, just when you're really starting to like him as a weapon, they lost him somewhere. I think it was early in the fourth quarter. Might have been late third, but that certainly did not help down the stretch, even though they fought admirably and they got to within three. They got an onside kick. They could have made it interesting, but they're just digging themselves too big a hole to start games. Get way behind. So I guess we will not get Coach back.
Yeah, I don't know what happened. He just cut out there.
We'll move on. We'll get to him next week. We'll get to Mitch Light, and we will continue to talk college football in a moment. You're listening to Darren, Donick, and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Back here on Darren, Donick, and Chase. Brought to you by Blue Note Juke Joint. Smoother than smooth. Mitch after Mace is how we roll on Tuesday afternoons in the final hour. Mitch Light from The Athletic is on the line with us. Mitch, how you doing?
I'm good, Darren. Hope you're doing well.
Yeah, doing not bad. We're not doing as well as Will Muschamp because he gets paid $270,000 a month for the next 49 months. It's good to be Will Muschamp, a fired coach in the SEC.
Yeah, I mean, the numbers, they all sound big, and these buyouts, they sound bigger when you do it monthly like that. I mean, I was reading that. I was actually editing a story yesterday about that from Josh Kendall, and that monthly figure is just staggering. But, hey, good for him. And, you know, that will – he'll get his money one way or the other. I expect him to take a job down the road as a defensive coordinator somewhere, so South Carolina won't be on the hook for all of that. But, yeah, I mean, good for him. Good for his agent, and, you know – tough for South Carolina right now. If you guys have been following what's going on, they've had both starting cornerbacks have opted out in the last 2 days. Additional two other defensive backs have opted out. So they're going
to create. It's getting ready to crater, is what you're saying.
Yeah, I mean they're struggling anyway, and you know you can't. This is a weird year for a lot of reasons. It's weird because of the timing. If you want to make a coaching change, because you're playing games all the way through mid-December, and I think the early signing period is December 12th. So the fact that there's an early signing period, which I think is, 3 years old now, that you're playing games in the mid-December, and aside from everything else. So, you know, South Carolina, I've always thought if you know you're going to make a move, don't prolong the inevitable. So I have no problem with their timing. It's just obviously it's affected their roster with guys opting out.
Well, so much for, you know, COVID will save coaches this year because COVID didn't save Will Muschamp.
Yeah, and I, you know, it sounds good to say that in August and September, but I see South Carolina's point. A school like that, you know, has 80,000 fans for the most part when times are good, even when times are bad, they can't afford not to make a move almost. If you know it's inevitable and your fans know it's inevitable, your fundraising suffers, your ticket sales suffer the next year. So while the optics don't look good, you know, while you're laying people off and all that stuff, I get why they did what they had to do. It's unfortunate. The whole thing stinks, but it was literally a business decision they couldn't afford not to make if they knew that Will Muschamp was not going to be the long-term answer.
Where do you think they are realistically going to go next?
I think there's a solid list of suitable mid-major coaches or, you know, group of five coaches. It seems like some years there's a good candidate list and some years there's not. I think this is a good list. And, you know, obviously Hugh Freeze is the first name that everyone's going to throw out there. They've got to decide whether or not they want to hire Hugh Freeze. I mean, the baggage, both – you know, NCAA and personal conduct, my guess is that won't matter that much. You might get some bad PR for, you know, a week or two or three days, and then you move on, and he's a proven head coach at three different – actually, if you go back to Lambeth, four different places. So I think he's would be obviously a place to look. You know, Billy Napier, the head coach at Louisiana Lafayette, has done a good job. And, yeah, there's a long list out there for suitable guys. One guy I don't think whose name is out there is Jeff Monken, the Army coach, and the connection there is South Carolina's president hired him while at Army. And, you know, coaches are flexible. I'm not saying Jeff Monken can't do anything but the option, but he's done a great job at Georgia Southern and Army running the option. And I don't think South Carolina is going to hire a coach who's that's their primary offense.
South Carolina's not been afraid to make the splash hire. And look, it's been okay for them, right? I mean, I guess what I'm asking you is, do you think, yeah, we're going to hear all kinds of names, and I know Billy Napier, I think he's done a tremendous job at Louisiana, and they want an offensive mind, blah, blah, blah. But they seem to also want they want to make noise because it's hard. I mean, we know South Carolina's not easy. Kentucky is not easy. Missouri's not easy. Ole Miss and Mississippi State are not easy places to win at the level that fan bases expect you to win the SEC, which is probably always unrealistic. So what did Ole Miss do? How do they get around that? They go out and hire a splash hire like Lane Kiffin. They are getting tons of attention because of their offense and because of Lane Kiffin. Mississippi State tried to do that with Mike Leach. I don't know. This one may backfire on them sooner rather than later. But they've hired Lou Holtz and Steve Spurrier and even Will Muschamp, name guys. Do you really think they're going to go out there and hire a coordinator or somebody at a mid-major school at South Carolina?
Yeah, I mean, I think they'll hire the best guy that they think. I mean, it's. I understand your point. It's valid. I think it's also they were a product of opportunity. You know, Spurrier and Lou Holtz were two of the biggest name coaches probably in the last, 30 years of college football, and they both happened to be available when South Carolina was looking for a coach. So, and different people made those decisions. There's different athletic directors. There's a different school president. So I don't see, you know, if Lane Kiffin were still at FAU, I might say, yeah, they might go after Lane Kiffin. But I don't see that guy out there. So I don't, you know, hiring Will hopefully Ray Tanner learned his lesson from hiring Will Muschamp. That was just, I never understood that to begin with, is why would you hire a coach who was unsuccessful at Florida? What's he going to do with South Carolina different? Yep. That he couldn't do at Florida, which is a better school. I mean, it's a better football program.
Right. It's you got more resources and the recruiting, and it's more fertile and better opportunity to win. You're right. I mean, so why did he think that was going to work there? Okay, would Ray Tanner be?
I got a good stat for you guys. I looked this up for our South Carolina, for Josh Kendall, South Carolina writer. It goes on the theory of hiring Power 5 coaches who've been fired in another Power 5 school hiring them.
Yep.
Since 2000, there have been 14 coaches who've been fired from Power 5 schools, fired for performance reasons only.
Okay.
And they've later gotten another Power 5 job. The combined record of those coaches at their second job is 324 and 359, conference record of 187 and 288. So basically, that's my theory. It doesn't make sense to hire someone who's failed at another Power 5 job. The only ones who have a winning record in conference play at their new school were Mark Richt, who in 3-4 years at Miami, and then Ed Orgeron, obviously, at LSU. So very rarely does it work out when you hire someone who's been fired at another school.
That's telling.
How about that?
Well, so the up-and-comer would seem to be the better bet.
Yeah, but one guy who's off to a great start and shocking, because I just thought it was like the worst hire ever, Carl Durrell at Colorado, you know, fired UCLA, was on Derek Mason's first staff. They're off to a 2-0 start, and one of the guys he beat was Chip Kelly, who didn't get fired from Oregon, obviously, but he was one of those guys who we thought was a slam dunk hire. So sometimes, you know what, we don't know what we're talking about, believe it or not.
Yeah, well, I guess Tennessee fans would say, yeah, how's that worked out, hiring the up-and-comer in Knoxville? That has exactly worked out.
Well, you can argue whether how much of an up-and-comer Jeremy Pruitt was. I don't, you know. He was a well-respected coordinator, but he wasn't. He wasn't a guy that was like.
Yeah, but Dooley and Jones. Yeah. I mean, they've all fit that bill, up and coming guy.
Yeah. I think, not to revisit the past too much, but I think Butch Jones was really the only guy that really fit like the hot up and coming coach who'd done well at two previous jobs. I mean, Derek Dooley. We don't, again, revisiting the past, but didn't have a good record at Louisiana Tech. If his last name wasn't Dooley, there's no way he's getting that job there. So there's hiring the up-and-comer, and then there's hiring a mid-major coach who really shouldn't even be on your list.
I feel like the mullet in Stillwater is always mentioned. I don't know how close he's ever come to leaving. Is that a guy that they should look into or no?
I don't. I mean, I think that ship has sailed. He flirted with them last time. You know, he's got a little Mike Leach in him as far as says a lot of weird things and is not, you know, might rub some people the wrong way or might rub some people the right way. You never know. But I hadn't even thought about that, but I think he's flirted too much with other jobs.
He has definitely done that. All right, how is this going to play out in Ann Arbor? This is a disaster up in Michigan. They just don't even look like a team that cares to play on Saturday. cares to play for their coach. Their coach doesn't exactly look interested. They just don't look very good. How is this going to play out for Jim Harbaugh?
Yeah, that's a great question, because I've been a Harbaugh defender. Probably you've heard me on the show for years that I thought he got a raw deal, and not a raw deal, just, you know, he brought a lot of the scrutiny on himself with his antics and stuff, but there's no defending their team this year. I mean, they're awful, and like, there's not winning, and there's looking disinterested and all that. So I don't know. They are not, you know, you talk about South Carolina SEC schools eating a lot of money on a contract. They're not going to do that, I don't think, Michigan. And I don't really – a lot was made that his contract in length isn't that long. Like, he's been out recruiting without, like, a 3- or 4-year extension, but he makes a lot of money. So even if it's only 2 years, and I should know this.
No, his contract, I can tell you. I've looked it up. It's up. It's up 3 days after the conclusion of next season. 3 days after the conclusion of next season, his contract is up.
So I guess they might only owe him $7 or $8 million. But so I don't know if he'll take the soft, quote unquote, soft landing if an NFL team's looking at him. Now, he is recruiting well. That hasn't fallen apart. He's got a top 10 class. So I don't know. You know, if you would ask me this 2 weeks ago, Darren, I'd say, you know, 90% chance he's back at Michigan. Now I think it's more 50-50. You know, and they could turn it around. You never know. I mean, they're not beating Ohio State, but if they turn it around and show some progress, but they you're right, they've looked awful.
Well, let's with a little bit of changing of the guard, Mitch, let's stay in the Big Ten for one more question. With Michigan and Penn State having major problems, Northwestern and Indiana have had great starts, and you've got the X factor in Wisconsin, who hasn't played many games, but man, I know Michigan was bad, but that quarterback looks like a game changer for Wisconsin. How would you rank the next three challengers for Ohio State?
Yeah, Grand March has looked very good. He was very highly recruited. You know, we make a big deal about Wisconsin doing more with less, but he was a top 75 national recruit a couple years ago, so it's not a surprise. Indiana, I'm very interested to see this week, and not taking anything away from them, 3-0 start. They deserve their ranking and all that. But they were very fortunate to beat Penn State. That call could have gone anyway, another way. They have played some really bad offensive teams that have thrown, you know, just made horrendous decisions. I've watched them play a lot, whether it's Michigan State or Michigan. Justin Fields is not going to do that. He's not going to throw the ball to Indiana. They've lived off turnovers. So I think they're in. I mean, this might not be fair, but I think they're in sort of a rude awakening this week. I think Ohio State doesn't have to sweat too much to beat them. After Ohio State, I think you'd have to say Wisconsin's the next best team in the league. Northwestern's been very good defensively, and the addition of Peyton Ramsey, the Indiana transfer quarterback, has given them some life offensively. They were horrendous there. So it is not a great league after Ohio State, because Michigan's not very good. Penn State's not very good. That next tier of teams that we thought might be good. So I would definitely say, from what I've seen, Wisconsin would be the biggest challenger to Ohio State, and that's the team they'll likely face in the Big Ten championship game.
So you're still saying, though, that even with all those teams having good seasons, you don't see anybody in the class of the Buckeyes right now?
I don't. I don't think Ohio State's quite as good defensively as they were last year. But I think they're just awesome offensively. Fields is incredible, just great decision maker, and they've got great wide receivers. They're just okay at running back for Ohio State, but I really don't see much of a challenger for them. And you know, their whole thing is gearing up to win 2 games in the playoff right now. I'd be shocked if they're not, you know, undefeated Big Ten champion in the playoff.
Vanderbilt has been more competitive the last 2 weeks, but I think you could make an argument that they dug such a deep hole. They looked so poor in the first 3-4 possessions each way that, you know, almost the other team let their guard down a little bit, and then Vanderbilt did settle in and play much better. But, you know, it's better than getting blown completely off the field for 60 minutes. So how much improvement are you seeing? And, I mean, obviously they've got a tough matchup here, but I think we're all kind of curious, what does Vanderbilt versus Tennessee look like on paper?
Yeah, I mean, clearly Vanderbilt's improved offensively in the past 2 weeks, and they've done it against two good defensive teams. You know, I don't think we talked about the Vanderbilt-Mississippi State game last Tuesday. You know, they did it against a good Mississippi State defense, and they did it against a good Kentucky defense. Kentucky had given up 43 points in its previous 4 games. Vanderbilt scored, what, 35. Now, I know 2 were late, and especially the second one was super late when they're playing soft coverage, But I thought Ken Seals, you know, he didn't make the mistakes last week that he did against Mississippi State. And I like the wrinkle they bring in Mike Wright at the goal line, because Ken Seals has struggled in the red zone. And Vanderbilt is not getting – they've run the ball relatively well, but they're not getting a big push on the offensive line in short yardage. So when you're inside the five-yard line, if you've got a quarterback who's not a good runner and you're not getting that push, you got to try something different. So I thought it was a good decision to go to Mike Wright, and it took him a lot of plays, but they scored on both of his possessions. So I think they're clearly getting better offensively. Defensively is a, you know, is not the same thing. They've really struggled. Really, they made Terry Wilson at Kentucky look really, really good, and he looked really good because he was comfortable. He had no pressure on him. Could sit back there, choose his receivers. That's the biggest one of the problems for Vanderbilt right now, is they don't take any team offensively out of their comfort zone. Everything comes too easily for the offense, and you got to rely on some turnovers. And they got that at Texas A&M, and that was a close game. But when they're not getting turnovers, it's going to be really difficult for this team to win a game.
We're talking to Mitch Light of The Athletic. Now, I don't mean this as a, where, you know, the Heisman question. I just mean quarterbacks and how you would rank quarterbacks. Where is Kyle Trask in that list right now for you?
He's near the top. In fact, we do I vote in The Athletics. We do a Heisman straw poll with all of our writers and editors. And I had Trask number two this week. I had Fields one, Trask two. I think he's phenomenal. You know, I've seen pretty much every snap. He's a great decision maker, and he's got good receivers. There's definitely great playmakers there, but you got to keep in mind they lost three starting wide receivers to the NFL, and he's only had Kyle Pitts for one half of the last two games, and has not missed a beat. Did it against an Arkansas defense, which had been very good there. So he reminds me a little bit of Danny Werfel as far as not the highest NFL prospect, doesn't have that rocket arm, but just makes great decisions and has almost perfect ball placement when he needs to.
Now, Florida clearly has their quarterback situation figured out. Tennessee, I guess they're going to go back to Garantano, is what it seems like, as they go against Auburn. Auburn, a 10.5-point favorite against the Vols this week. Do you give Tennessee any type of a chance if it's Garantano? And I know I've asked you this before, how short is that leash?
Yeah, I mean, that's a question that nobody seems to know as far as the leash. Obviously Tennessee has a chance. They won last time they played down there, and it's a talented roster. We all know that. But I like Auburn more and more than I've looked into them. You kind of forgot about Auburn. Hey, they got blown out by Georgia. They lost to South Carolina. But they've been really good lately. They didn't play last week, but Two weeks ago, they held Ole Miss to 28 points and 5.6 yards per play, which, if you've seen that Ole Miss offense, that's pretty good. And then they dominated LSU 2 weeks ago. The key is Bo Nix. They are 4-0 when he does not throw an interception. They are 0-2 when he does. And that's why they lost the South Carolina game, because he threw three interceptions and just some bad decisions. So I really like Auburn more and more when I look at the numbers in this game. I think it's a tough matchup for Tennessee, because Auburn is playing so well defensively. I'm just like everyone else, I'm intrigued to see what Tennessee does at the quarterback position. It's turned into a soap opera, but I think Auburn, I'm not saying is a playoff caliber team. I just think we forgot about them because they lost two games, but this is a really good team.
Now, how much do you think that we're going to learn about Arkansas this week against LSU? Because this is obviously a chance for them to go to 500. I think that they have exceeded our expectations. LSU, not the same LSU as they were last year, as we know. But do you think this is one of those games where you can learn, this is what they are. They're, I guess, maybe for real, more so than we originally thought?
First of all, they were favored a couple days ago. I don't know if they still are, which if you would have said at the end of last year that LSU would be – Arkansas would be favored over LSU based on,
they're favored by one. Year.
Yeah, just crazy. I don't know if I wouldn't phrase it that way, Chase. I think we already know what they are. They're a multi-threat team that's got some challenges offensively. They're pretty good defensively, despite what happened last week at Florida. So I think they've kind of carved out their identity. LSU, I'm glad you brought them up, because I just looked this up. This is staggering. You know, we all know their defensive struggles. They're 13th in the SEC in total defense and yards per play, only like a tenth of a point, or actually a hundredth of a point ahead of Ole Miss. And they are that bad, having played the 6th, 9th, 10th, 12th, and 14th offensive teams in the league. So they're getting torched by the bottom half of the league. It's not like they've played Ole Miss or Alabama or any of the really high-powered offensive teams. So I think it's going to be interesting with this time off LSU. Have they gotten better defensively? And if not, what can Arkansas do to them? Because we saw they have big playability. Arkansas had one running play and one pass play over 75 yards against Florida. So they, you know, in Tennessee saw what they can do some things in the passing game there. So I'm intrigued by this game, but I wouldn't say it's like kind of a referendum on Arkansas season by any stretch. I think we kind of already know who they are.
He is Mitch Light of The Athletic, joins us every week after Derek Mason. Mitch, appreciate it as always. We'll do it again next week.
All right, sounds good, guys. Take care.
Mitch Light does some great work there. We'll come back and wrap up Tuesday's edition of the show. But first, Darren, you have a word.
Well, you've got an opportunity to put in some great work in Week 11. Yeah, because Week 10 of the football season is in the books. It's over after last night the Vikings disposing of the Bears and their pathetic offense. But it's time for you to get ready for Week 11. There's no better place to get into all the action than DraftKings Sportsbook, America's top-rated sportsbook app. All you have to do is to add to the excitement of Week 11. How about this? DraftKings Sportsbook is going to bring back their can't-miss offer. If you haven't tried DraftKings Sportsbook yet, listen to this. Head to the App Store. Download it now. It's free and easy to do because you don't want to miss this. DraftKings Sportsbook is going to give all new users a chance to earn a sign-up bonus of up to $1,000. When you sign up and use the promo code 1025GAME, DraftKings Sportsbook has endless ways for you to bet, from live betting to betting on your favorite players. They do it all. Don't worry. Football isn't for you. DraftKings is going to give all MMA fans who want to sign up right now a chance to triple their winnings for any bet placed on UFC 255. DraftKings is safe, reliable, and secure, making it easy for you to deposit and withdraw your money at your convenience. Download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use the promo code 1025THEGAME. 1025GAME. Once again, 1025GAME. And when you sign up, you will get up to $1,000. Yep, 1025GAME. Get a sign-up bonus or deposit bonus up to $1,000 for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Bonus comprised of first deposit bonus. Deposit bonus requires 25 times playthrough. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. Well, not yet. We're not saying goodbye just yet. Let's talk a little hockey before we get out of here. One, let's talk about the jersey that's out there that we haven't really discussed. What do you guys think?
What we got in the background?
I don't know. Not sure what was going on.
Was that Vin Scully?
It sounded like Vin Scully.
It was. A guy sent me a clip of a hilarious thing, moment from the 80s, Vin Scully reading closing credits. Like, why? I don't know. Just it was, somebody was going down a rabbit hole that loves Vin Scully, so I can always appreciate a good Vin Scully clip.
That is blinking fertilizer.
Right on cue. As for your question on the jersey, the reverse retro, I like it. I think that the only thing that people are saying is they the primary's already gold. Why didn't they do blue? I kind of think it looks cool of how they've reversed, you know, the colors. That's why they're reverse retro. So I think it's neat. They tweaked the logo from the original logo, so it pays homage to the 1998 Predators, but also adds some flair from today. So I think it's kind of cool.
Tell me this, guys, because I can't quite tell. I haven't seen it live yet, but is the gold exactly the same, or is it a little bit more mustard? It doesn't look the same as the quote mustard, because that was another thing that would be retro, that the original golds that they wore, which was a different shade of gold altogether. In fact, there was sort of blue underneath the gold that created the mustardy look. But it looks to me like it's closer to the same shade of gold we've come to.
Yeah, no, I don't think it's mustard at
all. I think
not,
it's the same.
Not from the pictures I've seen.
Yeah, I think so too. And so, yeah, I see that, but I think it's a solid look for sure. And it's got the retro thing. Yeah, I looked at all of them this morning for the first time.
There's some good ones.
There's some good ones, and there are some absolutely crazy ones that I'm like, I cannot believe that they thought this was a good idea.
Yeah, Anaheim's, yuck.
Anaheim's, wow, is it
yikes.
Busy.
Yikes, yikes. Yeah.
Wild, we didn't need Wild Wing back. I'm just saying.
No. This one's got the skull logo on the shoulder.
Oh, I love it.
Which is cool. The back is basically from the inaugural season, right, the 98 jersey. The back design, I believe, this reverse retro.
It's the original numbers.
Yeah. Yep. I could have gone with the blue if that's what they decided, but I know this, that from a philosophical standpoint, I think they love just the distinction of when you see a team wearing gold, you know who it is.
The Preds.
Yeah, so I think they that philosophy won out.
And I get all that, and I've, you know, totally understood it, but in the spirit of an alternate, I can understand wanting a blue because it's, oh, that is the alternate jersey.
Yeah.
So I could, you know, if they did see, like, I even thought if they did a version of the Winter Classic that even if it was predominantly gold, it would still have a lot of blue on it with, you know, based on the design that they had for the Winter Classic jersey. But no, I like what they came up with.
Yeah, I think it's a cool. Solid look. I think that's long term. You know, I think some of the teams that took chances and went way off the rails, in my opinion,
yeah,
I don't think those jerseys are going to last very long.
Yeah, like
I look at the St. Louis Blues one. They've never had a red jersey. They've had red in the jersey before.
Yeah,
but I wouldn't have gone there. I've never seen them wear a red jersey.
Well, they alternated the bottom of it was red. And it was predominantly blue, the original version of that jersey.
Right, exactly.
And they swapped the colors. Dallas's was weird, like the whiteout. I mean, I don't get that.
That one got rated low. I was looking at The Athletic. They did sort of a tongue in cheek because it's all subjective, right? And also, as we've said many times, don't prejudge until you see it a few times and let your eyes get used to it. Oftentimes, you'll change your initial.
Sure.
God, I didn't think the Stars was that bad. I saw some other ones that I was like, man, that is busy. That was like 90s NBA kind of stuff that I think looking back, I was like, whoa.
Now, I think one of my favorites would be the Avalanche doing the Nordiques. That's pretty cool.
That was interesting. And the Carolina Hurricanes went with the
Whalers.
Hartford Whalers look too, which I think that's a little outside the box. You know, I see paying homage, but if it's your third jersey, it's your jersey. It's not like a one-time tribute.
Right.
It's
well,
like,
and here's the thing. For a lot of teams, it's not their third jersey. This is more of a fourth jersey because a lot of teams already have a third jersey, Carolina being one of them, that they use, you know, and are going to continue to use. This is a separate deal is how I understand it. And so you're going to have some teams that wear, you know, three and four jerseys. Like L.A., the Kings, I love that, the purple and gold look. I think that's awesome. Minnesota went with kind of the North Stars look, which I think is pretty cool. But, you know, Carolina last year did wear against Boston. They did wear the Whalers uniforms and had Brass Bonanza. Say that three times fast.
Bass Bonanza?
Bass Bonanza.
For all you fishermen out there, the Bass Bonanza will be coming up this weekend.
Just getting tongue-tied today.
We need Vin Scully to voice that one over.
You know, the Canadians, that was cool. The Christmas jerseys for New Jersey. Now, I love Arizona's.
That was wild.
Yeah, but I liked
it. Wild. What about, speaking of the wild, what about the North Stars
I like
homage?
It.
I kind of
yeah,
like that
cool.
one.
It
was fun.
I didn't like Calgary's.
Calgary's way too busy.
I like the Rangers bringing back Lady Liberty. That was always a cool look.
Yeah, that's a good one. And then tell me what the Islanders did or didn't do. That just looks like an Islanders jersey.
Yeah,
to me.
I don't really know what the difference
is. Is that really different than anything?
Now, what do you think about the Capitals? Because I kind of it's got some '90s NBA theme going.
Yeah, I mean it's not the worst, but I think it's a little too much. A little too much.
Chicago's was fine.
Like, I do wonder, is it your, what is your goal? Is this just sort of a retro, short term thing for this year, or do you want this to be your third jersey for the foreseeable future? And if it's the latter, then I think you really want to do something that you think is a good looking uniform for a long time, and not just, okay, hey, everybody did the retro thing, this is just for this year. So I'm not sure how these things. I guess it's up to the individual team how they want to use it.
Yeah, I'm not sure. But, like, you know, this is the third jersey for the Preds, whereas, you know, Vegas, they have a gold jersey that's their third, and then they have this red one, which I'm not a huge fan of it, for this. So, I mean, like I said, some teams are going to have more than others.
There's also some news quickly on, was it Pierre LeBrun putting some stuff out about possible next season startup?
It was. He's been monitoring the talks, and I know, you know, there's so many details to get to. We all want this. We want to hear the news right away, and they're moving through it as fast as they can, I know. But Pierre LeBrun had some tidbits. Both sides, as of today, still hope for a January 1 puck drop. But he cautions, we'll see, in the tweet, and they want the cup awarded by July 15th at the latest, hopefully sooner. Most of the conversations between both sides have focused on a 60-plus game season. The All-Canadian division remains a thing for the obvious reasons. Mm. So if there's an early January puck drop, that means getting this done by the end of the month. As we saw in the spring and summer, these things can drag out. But the hope is that if there's an agreement, it's within the next 7 to 10 days. But we'll see if the talks hit a snag or not. Of course, paying the players is going to be a big part of this. How did they get paid? How much is deferred, etc.? But it looks like they're making some progress. And a quick shout-out to the Commodores in the women's soccer tournament, the SEC soccer tournament. Tennessee has a great team, an outstanding team. Vanderbilt beating them 4-1 in the quarterfinals of the SEC soccer tournament. Just saw it pop up there, so boom. Give a little shout-out.
Where
to
was that being played?
I don't know where it's being played.
I remember hearing it. There's a reason I asked, but dang it. Can't remember where that was being played. Interesting. All right, that will do it for us today. You have a great rest of your Tuesday. Continue to be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. We'll see you then.